Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here it is. It is the night before Thanksgiving. Time for all kinds of horn Thanksgiving traditions. I was discussing with Agnes earlier. I think we may, now that they're all like, you know, little teenagers and one's even a grown woman with a mommy in her own right, and someday we'll have it happen to her, I think we may get the whole fam damily crowded back here into the studio for the annual telling of the Kincaid family Thanksgiving saga. Because in the course of my discussion with Agnes, I said, you know, the fun thing is we can go back and listen to each archive of each year and listen to how the story grows in the telling. It is Agnes's Thanksgiving horror story. The nightmare before Thanksgiving, if you will. So that's on tap for tonight. A couple of other Thanksgiving traditions as well that we hope to get to. Some little, you know, the usual shtick. What are you grateful for? And let me just start out by saying that I am ever so grateful for all of you. I am thankful for all of you. I'm thankful for the conversation that we have, the fun, the kidding around, as well as the ability to be intensely in earnest as we discuss why this country is the way it is, what it would take to get it back on track, back on the rails, so to speak, and just what it means to share that American experience of being part of the working class and carrying an entire nation on our backs. I'm also grateful to you and thankful to you, thankful for you, for the fact that you remain dedicated month after month after month to making sure that that conversation continues. The horn was a dream born in the minds of me, of Wayne and me. It was born out of a dedication to Wayne's beloved wife, Gina, who had passed away just months before this incarnation, the internet-only incarnation of the horn, went on the air. And it is every show dedicated to her memory. Because she understood so profoundly the need for what we are doing, for creating this dialogue and this discussion. I am thankful for all of you who, through your dedication and your contributions, make sure that this does continue. Thankful for those who contribute one time or as often as possible, no matter the amount. Thankful for those who are there just like the sun rising in the east every month. Thankful for all of you. And I can't say that with any greater sincerity because it is said with the entirety of my being. Let me say that I am thankful for the odd happenstance of meetings that have come to create the horn. Because while the horn was created in the minds of Wayne and me, it was vastly expanded upon by folks like John Fox and Peter Godbold, by the dedication and hard work of Ben Birch, and then almost one by one, those who came in and stayed for the long haul, the News Ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Lottie, who is a moderator in the chat room, and incredibly intelligent human being as well. I mean, you can't pigeonhole Lottie. And like I said last night, he's got a damned fine recipe for sweet potato pie. And several other things, too. And I'm especially thankful for Sue, who's in the chat room now, who is home from the hospital, recuperating and recovering. And glad we are that she is. No matter how tough times get, we can look around us and there are manifest reasons to be thankful for each other and to each other. Peter Godbold, who literally saved our hides on a number of occasions when computers went to hell, and who then decided to step into the breach himself and create one of the most wonderful programs that will ever air in Strictly Confidential, and dispelled a little bit of the mythology and the ignorance for all of us, and I include myself, as he just went night by night talking about what it means to be a gay man in America and part of that community. Is beautiful. Somewhere out there is our good friend Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man, who continues to plug away in hopes of someday cranking it back up again. Guy James is down in Florida, and he is watching the crew from Comcast destroy his neighborhood, trying to find out why they can't make his series of tubes work. You know, the internet, the internet's fine if all you ever want to do is download stuff, but if you want to do a show, you got to have upload speed. And right now, Guy is having the devil's own time trying to get upload speed. That's where Guy's been. And I'm thankful. I'm just so richly blessed. And though they fuss and fight and carry on amongst themselves as siblings do, I have four of the most wonderful kids in the world. And Agnes is a light unto my darkness. I'm blessed to be associated with some of the most dedicated human beings on the planet, in those who work tirelessly and against incredibly long odds to try to save these Appalachian communities that have been here for so long and are under such pernicious attack from the mountaintop removal industry. Everyone at Coal River Mountain Watch, my friends at OVEC, folks like Jeff Biggers, everyone who touches this issue and makes it a little more likely that someday Appalachia will be safe, they are a blessing to me. And so that's just it. You can't help but reflect on that kind of thing. And I think about those who are gone, my father and my mother. And my God, did I draw a pair of aces in those two. amazing. I look at my poor attempts at parenting, and I look back at what I put them through, and I think, my God, I would have had a fit on me. Now I'm sort of earning it back, and that's the way the wheel turns. I'm thankful for friends, near and far. No matter how hard it seems, our blessings are easily at hand should we only take a breath and a moment to stop and count them. They are all around us. It's 10 minutes past the hour, isn't it? Yes, it is. Hey, Microsoft and the real world time are in sync for a change. Woo! And there's an abundance of news for tonight. I don't know how much of it we will get to. Your thoughts on this reflective time are more than welcome, and I think highly appropriate. As we look around America, there are things to ponder that are disturbing in the extreme. The folks over at Think Progress note the following, that with the current recession and increasing unemployment, the number of Americans who lacked enough food hit a record high in 2008, and charities can't keep up. Let the private sector do it. 1,000 points a lot. They can do it. No, they can't. Just from around the country, Phoenix, Arizona, donations aren't meeting demand this year at St. Mary's Food Bank. They were looking to get maybe 26,000 donated turkeys, but by this Monday past, they were only at 13,000. Jerry Brown at St. Mary's Food Bank said, "A lot of people who used to give as donors are now coming to us and asking for food. These 3 days are going to be make or break whether or not we're going to be able to feed everybody this year." Down Mississippi way, the Mississippi Food Network, they're sort of the clearinghouse for providing nonprofits throughout the state of Mississippi, simply canceled its turkey program altogether, saying that they simply could not afford to do turkeys at all. From last year to this year, they are expecting to feed nearly double the number of people. And yes, the cost of turkey has gone up dramatically. A little bit west is Houston. At the convention center tomorrow, organizers expect 25,000 people in need. But knowing that, they are what they call almost in the panic mode, because more than a dozen companies that financially supported the dinner in years past have pulled out. And of those remaining, 60% have scaled back their donations. As of this past Saturday, they had less than a third of the number of turkeys that they need, and they even lacked what they referred to as the traditional Thanksgiving Day vegetables. But it's not all south and west. It extends north and east as well. The Greater Boston Food Bank, that gave out 38,000 turkeys last year. Well, the ticker on their website as of the publication of this story yesterday showed that they had collected just 4,200 turkeys thus far. And of course, there's a larger consideration, and that is that we do these stories on the night before Thanksgiving, and we do these stories on the night before Christmas, and we sit back and we reflect a moment on what we euphemistically call those less fortunate. And, you know, I even hate that word fortunate because it seems like it's a matter of luck, and that somehow buys into that whole neo-Calvinist, if only God had liked you, you'd have been born rich, standing on third thinking you hit a triple. There are reasons that people are in the extremis and in the straits that they are. And in many instances, it is through no fault of their own. In instances where it is through their own fault, it is a function of this culture that we are very, very unforgiving. It's part of the reason we wind up with the politicians that we wind up with. Because only those who have somehow managed to keep their noses clean, so to speak, can run for office because of the smear politics that exist in this country. And people of genius and goodwill stay as far away from the process as they possibly can because of the assassination politics initiated and perpetrated and perpetuated and perfected by the monsters of the American right wing. And so tonight, and all around the country, various and sundry shows, they will talk about, you know, the food bank, Thanksgiving dinners and the like. But the fact of the matter is, if you eat once every 3 months, it doesn't work so good if you're a human. That's okay if you're a boa constrictor, but humans have to eat every day. And the problem in this country is perpetual and pernicious. And so, noting that, we are called upon to try to find answers. Some of those answers are arguably political. And I don't care how much the right wing squeals that it's apples and oranges and you can't make that comparison, as long as this country has billions of dollars with which to drop ton after ton after ton after ton of high explosives on the poorest of the poor on this planet, then by God, those of us of good conscience have a moral duty to call that out and ask the question why it is that we find killing to be more important than the nurturing of life itself. And, of course, I include in life itself people from the newborn to the soon gone, and every age and year in between, unlike the Republican Party, which does not give a rat's rear end about anything but fetuses and gleefully holler for the next increase in the Pentagon budget. It is prayer meeting, brethren and sistren. But I don't think the prayer meeting shtick is necessarily called for. Ha! So we will... we will go through this evening, and perhaps we will inquire of ourselves and our nation and our posterity why it is that our priorities are so bass-ackwards. Where we talk, where we have segments of this populace that talk about this being a Christian nation at the same time that every blessed day we are engaged in cold-blooded murder of people who have barely ever even heard of the United States of America, but for whom hearing of us is to hear of our killing efficiency. And we ask ourselves, dang, Gomer, why you reckon they hate us? Here's a hint for George W. Pinhead, or Bush. It's not because we have Frisbees and wheat checks and home mortgages and freedom. It's because we kill their loved ones. Guilty or innocent. So yes, brethren and sister, do come on down that blood red aisle and fall upon your knees and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and pray to whatever you see fit to pray to or not at all. But hope that somewhere along the way we come to our senses. Before the evil we have done catches up with us. It's 21 minutes past the hour. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Locally, that's 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. And we will go straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, so, I was going to say I'm thankful for this show, among other many other things, but, you know, yeah, it's really nice to have you out there. I mean, I know it's a struggle month to month, but trust me, it's definitely appreciated out here in California.
Well, bless your heart, that you have no idea what that means. It's I won't say it's better than silver and gold because I've really never had it to compare to, but it might be.
Hey, so, the food bank situation is really, wow. It seems to be across the country, too, like you said. It's not just in the usual spots, you know?
Yeah, it is. And that story out of Phoenix in particular that notes the fact that the people who used to come and donate the food are now coming and hoping that there's some there for them now.
Yeah, that's because the people who are barely making it are, guess what, the ones who donate the most. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's the majority of people who give, you know, to charities in this country, people who are just working too, you know?
Indeed.
I'm not surprised that those people are now in need, you know?
No, but I guess the thing that disturbs me the most, Sandra, is can any of us look down the road and see it getting better?
Well, no, that's the thing. And, you know, I realize at this point it's just, you know, getting repetitive. But I'm sorry. Now we're going to have to be treated to this man explaining why he wants to escalate this war. I guess he's giving a speech on Tuesday.
That's my understanding, yeah.
And it's just, it just boggles the mind. I'm like, are you kidding? You know? He needs to get up there and say, we're withdrawing in a month. Have a good evening. Happy holidays. That's what he needs to say.
We're on our way out.
You know, have a nice holiday. You know, God bless America, however they sign off. That's
right, and, you know, it'll take us a little time to get the bags packed, but we're leaving.
Right. That's what he needs, because, I mean, excuse me, where's the money going to come from?
I don't know.
Because
you've noticed that the right wing is having a fit about this idea of maybe imposing a war tax. Did you follow that?
I sort of glanced at some headlines about that. I mean, who's initiating that? Is that Pelosi?
No, it's David Obey.
Is that a progressive?
Yes, semi-progressive, semi-liberal from Wisconsin.
And the right wing are having problems because.
Because they're going to tax the rich.
Well, it's. So I am so sick to death of the people who utilize the most that this government have to offer, not paying their fair share, you know?
But see, they don't think of things in terms of their fair share. They are, again, and it comes back to some of what Kevin mentions from time to time. They believe themselves to be part of the elect, Sandra. I mean, I don't mean to beat a dead horse or anything, but they really do. It is not, you know, the United States of America has a massive military that we pay for to protect their property because they hold most of it.
Right. No, that's what I mean. These are the people who benefit the most, and it's growing exponentially, while the rest of us, you know, are living in fear of the nickel and diming the death that's upon us or coming. I mean, back to my main song and dance is this health care bill. I'm at the point now where can we just not do it at all? Can someone please kill it? I'm sorry. I am sort of, I'm appalled.
I know. And see, I've tried real hard to wrap my mind around this incrementalism that the Democratic leadership keeps preaching on that, you know, well, you know, we got to pass a bill, pass some bill, pass any bill.
No, we don't.
Because, you know, well, we'll come back and fix it. Well, didn't Bill Clinton plan on coming back and fixing the welfare reform debacle?
No. This is just, I just think it's just a straight up bailout, barely concealed at this point, because everyone's writing about a mandate and that it's law. And it's like, are you kidding me? A law? A law is like what you were saying before.
Right, and I'm gonna get a criminal record.
And they're to protect them and theirs. You know what I'm saying? And to,
well, I don't even know. I don't even know if this kind of enforced from the bottom up transfer of wealth is even constitutional.
Well, they'll throw the 10th Amendment at you and the right to tax and all sorts of bullshit to justify mandates in this country, but. You know, it's bullshit. You know, I mean,
it truly, yeah. I've got to say that in large, for the most part, I'm with you, Sandra, because I feel no charitable urge whatsoever toward any health insurance company in this country, and that's what this is. This is welfare for the insurance companies.
Yeah, no, it's just blatant, and I don't care what anyone wants to argue with me. I don't see an upside to this at all. They're going to provide a subsidy up to, like, you know, $80,000 to subsidize poor people to buy this pernicious product? Please explain to me. Did you see that article I sent to you?
Yes, I did.
I know you may not have read the whole thing.
No, I went through it. I did, and
it's despicable, right?
I wasn't sure if my eyes were bleeding or crying.
No. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. That right there is disgusting. I couldn't even believe what I was reading, you know. And it speaks to this idea that some segments, it's okay, they can just die.
Yeah, and it is a long piece, but just so folks can know what we're talking about,
yes.
It's over at counterpunch.org. It is written by Mary Lynn Kramer, and it's called Healthcare Reform and the Skinning of Seniors. And it is a lengthy read, and it is a dense read, and by the time you're done with it, your guts are in knots.
Well, and that's why I wrote, I said it's so ugly, because that's what I thought about when I started reading it. You know, just horrible.
Well, I think maybe the essence of this, Sandra, if I may try to sort of distill it, is the distinction or the disagreement between those who say, well, you know, we've got to take a little step here and a little step there, and eventually we'll get to single payer. And those of us who say, no, as long as there is a private for profit health insurance company involved, you will never get to single payer.
No, you will never get to it. And this, I mean, and I know I can't. The reason why I keep repeating it, because I can't even wrap my head around it. This is just sort of a wake-up call for me after spending the last 5 or 6 years kind of educating myself. You know what I mean? And I have more of an understanding of the power of the state and the role of the state. And this is by far horrific. This will drive my ass to arm myself so I can mitigate the power of the state. You know what I'm saying? Because it's out of control. I'm not interested in supporting this enterprise anymore, you know?
Yeah, but let me up. I've had enough.
And
right.
Yes, exactly. And I'm sort of thinking, what is becoming the upside of the U.S. experience, Bob?
It wouldn't be the great high-quality television. No. Wow. I don't know.
And I just say that because there's so many gaping areas where the citizenry is not being helped. And it's not a matter of God helps those who help themselves or none of that. You're just smashed. The foot is on the neck, you know?
Yeah. Help me. I can't breathe. Right.
Well, I don't know.
And meanwhile, this is the constant little hydraulic that we get caught in, or the undertow that grabs us, because at the same time that we look at the so-called the people who are supposed to be on our side, and there are some, Sandra, there are some, but they are few enough that they are effectively minimized, neutered, if you will. You know, there are good groups out there, Progressive Democrats of America, you know, and they're trying. They're just, they don't have the billions to fight this, to prosecute this struggle.
But you look at
the other side, and I mean, you know, we started out talking about Afghanistan and, you know, hang up the going out of business sales sign and, you know, move on. Well, the former presidential candidate, Senator John McGrumpy, said yesterday that we need to spend less time in Afghanistan focusing on an exit strategy. Of course, this came on that network where he said, Greta, the exit strategy takes care of itself once you succeed, just as it did in Iraq.
But aren't we still spending billions per month there, though?
We are. And the fuel, what are we paying per gallon?
Well, over in Afghanistan, I know it's $420.
Yeah, a gallon.
A gallon, no.
Vehicles that are measured in terms of gallons per mile and not miles per gallon.
No, but at the same time, after Obama got released from his little chit-chat from China, he's out there talking about entitlement reform. You know that that horrible phrase that means they want to finish off the rest of the programs like Social Security in this country. So now Obama's talking this bullshit, and it's like, what are you talking about? You going to turn around and increase spending on these various wars? You going to turn around and look at us and talk about entitlement reform?
Yeah, well, and see, that's, you know, these dumbass right-wingers, Sandra, they say, well, you know, we got to stay till we win in Afghanistan and Iraq.
With what?
Well,
quantitative easing that's nonstop?
Right, but it goes beyond that. Okay, so we stay till we win, and we declare victory, and it's not just what defines winning. I mean, we've been asking, okay, fine, tell me, if you want to stay till we have victory, tell me what victory is. But there's a question past that that nobody's even touched yet, and that is, okay, once we've got our victory, what the f*** have we won?
You know?
You know, it's not like, you know, a brand new car. No. A worn-out third-world country. You know, this is, but by the same token, this is all stuff that was started by the geniuses, one of whom was five deferment Dick Cheney. You know, this guy, when that clown was head of Halliburton,
he
went out and bought W.R. Grace and Company. Does that name ring a bell?
No. Well, who's that?
Those are the people who poisoned Libby, Montana, and that town in Massachusetts that was in the book A Civil Action and film by the same name. When they bought W.R. Grace and Company, it was nothing but one great big wad of liability that that damn near sunk KBR to the point that KBR got sucked up by Halliburton.
Oh, wasn't he involved in taking on all the asbestos liability?
That was W.R. Grace.
Yes, 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 I do. Yeah, and I'm thinking, and this is the experience we can believe in, right?
Yeah, this is the grown-ups who were in charge.
Right, right. No, I remember that vaguely. Yeah, no. My God. And that that he's dripping with blood still out and about.
Yeah, and but see, Afghanistan is that too, and so is Iraq. You know, okay, oh great, we've got a couple, we won. We've got a couple of client states that are just going to sit and suck away the very lifeblood of our nation for generations on end. You know, this is not like South Korea where you've got a prosperous state in the South and, you know, you put 50,000 troops in there and, you know, well, whatever. No, this is not that. This is a state that will be in a, these are states that will be in a constant state of disarray and a constant state of need and not be self-supportive or self-sustaining. And we're just, we are literally committing nation-state suicide.
No, this is definitely inverted totalitarianism. I mean, this book that I read from this political science, Walt Wolin, he, you know, has managed democracy with this huge amount of resources devoted to a perpetual war. Because I don't know what Obama thinks he can say to convince Americans, because most Americans that I deal with day in and day out are not interested in Afghanistan.
Not even a little bit.
Not even at all. They're like, what's going on? So it's just going to be interesting and depressing. Because what is he going to say? Because he already assured us, oh, once we hear his grand plan, we'll be ready to rally around. Is he for real?
The only thing I'll rally around is helping pack the bags.
Well, no, but I just, because he, you know, he's going to spend 40 minutes laying out, how do you describe it? We're going to, he had some phrase, some nebulous phrase that was talking about not victory, but get the job done. Yes.
Well, and that goes back, to the Defense Department stuff of a month or so ago, where they said that, you know, well, we've retasked our policy initiative, and you know how they talk. And what we're going to do now, we realize we're never going to completely eliminate the Taliban, so now we just have to make them bearable. Really? This is a strategy.
And speaking of that, please explain to me, how do you put those whatever guy on trial in New York and still have this, the two-tier, you know, the rest of them being tried in other various...
Right, that includes a teenager... from Canada,
no,
who's going to be subjected to a kangaroo court trial.
Right, but, you know, so it makes it, it really is a show, that is the epitome of show trials, and I don't mean to go there, but didn't Hitler change up the courts all sorts of different ways?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, right, because, you know, that whole announcement from Attorney General Holder was sort of along the lines of, you know, nod and a wink, trust me, we're going to get convictions.
It was worse than that to me because we know they're going to put that fool on trial because they think they have a slam dunk. And even didn't Obama say even if he won, we weren't going to let him go?
Yes.
I mean, what is that?
I could literally hear little veins popping in Glenn Greenwald's eyeballs when I read what he wrote about it.
Oh God, no! I mean, because just those comments alone was just sort of like, you know, anyone who has just a cursory knowledge of our legal system, you know. And, I mean, and it just filters on down because I'm still riveted by this woman who's made you 15 years for jumping a line in Walmart. Have you seen that?
Yes, yes.
I mean, you know, and I hate to jump around, but it's not really jumping because that's the system for you and I, all right?
Oh, yeah.
That's that system. Then you have the system for the so-called terrorists. Then you have Scooter Libby. I mean, that's such an array.
Right, but just remember, not that I'm particularly proud of my wittiness, but just remember that the legal system in the United States is predicated on the three M's: protect the money, manage the mayhem, and punish the morons.
Shut the hell up! No, that's hilarious. I got to remember that. But that woman, she's a school teacher, and all of a sudden her little encounter at Walmart is going to go from that to possibly 15 years.
Right, and
I have to add that in because I'm like, okay.
Yeah, because if she was a white school teacher, it would be well, you know, okay, you need to, and it's all over. Who's in? And you know, this is Wednesday. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving, and I, honest to God, don't know what we're going to be talking about on Friday if I'm here.
Oh, you mean with the people shopping?
Yeah, who's going to get stomped to death? Who's going to, you know, who's going to bust a cap over some dumbass toy from China in Toys R Us? You know, oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm praying that because of the state of things, you might get less of a show in that regard. But on the other hand, maybe they'll be more desperate.
No, that's the thing. It won't be less. It will be more because, oh, well, you know, it's the only day we can have Christmas. You know, if we don't get
the shop.
Right. If we don't get there and get the big bargains at the Wally World, well, you know, no Christmas for us kids.
No, because I know, like, my family tomorrow, you know, they'll do whatever. You know, I'll be stuck looking at the football. But them freaks on Friday, they all go out. And I'm like, no, I'm at home. Have fun. You know what I mean? They hit the, I mean, I think some of them.
You know, there's 2 days that I just stay the heck home. And that's the Friday after Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve.
I am in.
Because those are both amateur days. And New Year's Eve, of course, is amateur night.
Yeah.
You know, don't drink for 364 days of the year and go out and have, you know, two Kahlua and creams, and the next thing you know, they're naked in the streets.
Yeah, New Year's is so pedestrian. You're right. I have to say, I haven't partaked in years because there's too many crazies around. You know.
And I'll have more fun at home. Frankly,
I
mean, I'm not going to kid anybody. Long about NFL kickoff time, as I'm finishing up putting the finishing touches on Thanksgiving Day dinner. You know, it's a little early in the day, but I don't do it all the time. I'm going to crack a beer.
Listen, everyone's safe in the house. Food is abundant. Football, what else you going to do? And, you know, puff, puff, give, give, too, if you know what I'm talking about.
Nope, yeah.
You know, screw that. But, you know, I have to say, yeah, I'll end the conversation on that note because that's fairly positive, I have to say.
Oh, but, hey, you want positive. I sat there in slack-jawed amazement watching the Bengals go down Sunday to your Raiders.
Yeah, what in the world?
Just let them hang around. Sebastian Janikowski comes in, just puts one right through their heart.
Listen, speaking of that, you know what? I know everyone...
You know, that's a team that did the Steelers twice this year.
They did. Well, the Steelers, they seem to be having some issues. The Steelers, you know who I wanted to lose finally? Peyton Manning. I'm sick of it, all right? I don't mind him. I think he's kind of funny, but the aura around him is like enough already, you know?
Oh, I know. I know.
I'm like Drew Brees, who I actually like because he looks like a hooligan. Love him.
You know, how can you not just sit there and say, you know, please God, if you're there and you're paying attention, let the Saints just do it all this year, please.
Oh, that'd be great. Just on the experience of where it's from and also what they look like. I mean, they look crazy. You know, just the team, the whole atmosphere is great. But the Raiders, they still trying to pop up, but that is a horrific organization.
Oh man, it's just a train wreck.
I mean, that fool punching people, then he punched up women. You know how to shit.
Oh yeah, and you know, isn't Al Davis into the Christopher Pike chair? You know, with one red for yes and two green for no or whatever. You beep 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 up and down the sidelines now.
Exactly. It's like, please, him and I know Jerry Jones is a little bit young, but he's another one that meddles. I heard like the excellent conversation about Jerry Jones by some idiot, but he was right on. He said, come December, Jerry starts meddling into it, and they all go to hell in Dallas, and it's perfect, because it's like, oh, yeah. All of a sudden, he gets in the middle of everything, and they lose.
You know, I just want to, I wonder how the world's largest on-site sports complex jail is working out down there, especially, you know, given the way the Cowboys are playing.
Didn't they spend like a billion something obscene for that?
Oh, the whole thing is obscene. But yeah,
and they suck. They can't even get a touchdown. What have they got? Like two touchdowns in three games? You know, I'm like, where's Jessica? He obviously needs home, bitch, because he ain't playing right. And my other favorite quarterback, you got me going now, is that idiot Sanchez, who ain't never seen nothing but sunshine. It's like, good morning. You know? He's not even gonna come from USC, so I don't know. That fool, I don't know if he's gonna make it.
Well, and the same thing happens in the college game. That kid that was just the most brilliant young freshman who had ever drawn breath the first four games for Michigan, Forcier?
Yeah.
As the weather got colder, he got worse.
His shit got turned around. Yeah, for real.
It ain't like this in Orange County, Coach.
No, but that coach ain't your favorite, right?
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, the difference, you know, for me, the difference between me running over a skunk in the middle of the road and running over Rich Rodriguez is there's skid marks in front of the skunk. But, you know, that's because I'm a bitter Mountaineer fan.
Right. Well, no, but see, the college game has gotten awesome dark this year, don't you think?
Oh, it's just, yeah, it is. And you know, we've still got a distinct chance of two, respectable unbeatens on the outside looking in.
Cincinnati?
Well, okay, three.
Okay.
Cincinnati, TCU, and Boise State.
Boise, but you know what? They're going to pat them on the head and say you had a nice season. Get out of here.
Yeah, and the thing is, Oklahoma's not even going to be out there in the BCS most likely to get hammered by the likes of, to get their traditional New Year's night hammering.
Yeah, we ain't going to see the ass whooped this year. Listen, I really want, I've been so glad that horrible Tim Jesus, Tebow, they've been winning, but he don't look all that great.
No, no.
But to lose, wouldn't it be great if they lose? I don't, ugh.
Well, but you got to remember that a long time ago, Urban Meyer also said, the only job he ever really wanted was Notre Dame.
Oh, well, that poor bastard, he's going to be at somebody's...
Did you see that somebody sucker-punched the Notre Dame quarterback in a bar?
I heard that at a bar, yes. Yeah, no, I saw that. I was like...
And it was described as sucker-punched, as in, hey, turn around, whack!
Right. But no, but I think that they probably pay up old Charlie Weiss his $20 million, and he's going to have to be gone, huh?
Yeah. I think his deal will probably be a little bit better than Tyrone Willingham's was.
Oh shit! He never recovered from that experience. Poor dude.
Well, when you leave Notre Dame, there's really not much elsewhere to go.
Well, no, but I mean, I think Weiss is just going to be offensive coordinator back in the NFL, don't you think?
It'd make sense. It's where he belongs. And the fact of the matter is Al Groh at Virginia has kind of come unglued the last few years, and he's making a small fortune. He came out of the NFL. I think in large part the NFL does something to you because it's a wholly different coaching experience.
Well, you
come back into college, and it just doesn't work the same way.
And plus, you got to be kissing people's ass.
With the exception of Pete Carroll.
Well, yeah, but Pete Carroll, he sort of had him up. Funny year this year.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I really wanted Stanford to win last week. But,
I don't understand why they didn't. I don't understand what happened because they pounded some ass the last couple of games. I was like, what's going on?
And nobody's even talking about that Gearhart kid for the Heisman.
Well, no, that fool is crazy.
He's
amazing. Apparently he's some sort of, real smart... Smarty too.
And I haven't seen a guy who ran like a beer truck since Owen Schmidt left West Virginia.
Well, the thing about Stanford is they don't F around. There's no spread. There's none of that bullshit. They're just
no, and you got to go to class too.
And they're just playing straight up, line them up, knock them down type of football. I don't know why they didn't.
And see, the Michigan faithful have got to be losing their minds because that's a Michigan alum coaching that Stanford team. Jim Harbaugh.
I don't know that. Is that right?
Yeah.
The guys
that are not so crazy about Plugs up in Ann Arbor right now, that's what we call him, Plugs Rodriguez. If you look at the hairline, it fits. They got to be looking at Stanford going, guys, Jim Harbaugh actually went here.
Yeah, and he, runs the same sort of program. They have all kind of strong academic requirements, right, like Notre Dame at Stanford.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, just in from the email, Sandra, the phrase from President Obama is, "We are going to finish the job."
Oh, God, that's even worse. Right. Okay, well, listen, Bob, you and your family have a wonderful holiday, and I'll be thinking about you when I'm trying to watch the football.
Yeah, okay, do that, please. I'll send a few brainwave thoughts your way, too.
Okay, take care.
Later, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye. Sorry, just you got to get. Sometimes it's coming up on Thanksgiving. You got to get that football stuff out of the way. By the way, I'm corrected by Andy. He says I'm thinking about Dresser Industries, where Cheney orchestrated the merger, and Dresser had a lot of pollution problems too. Not W.R. Grace. W.R. Grace had a bunch of pollution problems. But Andy points out, We spend $2,700 per capita, U.S. citizen, for our military. Every one of us spends $2,700. Only $300 per capita in Japan, $500 per capita in Germany. And then we wonder why we have nothing left for our citizens. In Japan and Germany, health care as a right, great unemployment benefits, low crime rates, great public transport, and higher quality of life, they get all this. This is not going to change in the U.S., says Andy, until we get the defense industrial complex reined in. Andy says, in 2 weeks, I'm heading to Prague, Czech Republic. And he says, Dave has it right. For us unreligious types, it's a wonderful place. I go there every year to see what it's like to work to live instead of living to work, which is what we do here. Great beer there. Oh yes. Pilsner Urquell, Budvar. Those are the first two that come to mind, but yeah. And Andy says, Sanders right. I wonder what is the upside to the American experience. What is it bringing us except for paranoia and illness? That's sort of a 1-2 punch. And the thing is, you know, I reeled off what I'm thankful for at the beginning of the program, and all of those things, none of those things are uniquely related to being American as opposed to, you know, Swedish or Swiss or Austrian or Australian. See, I know the difference, unlike former Dim Leader. Those are personal things. If we were saying, you know, I have reason this Thanksgiving to be grateful for the fact that I live in the United States because we're finally going to get on the road to taking care of every single citizen in this country. But I can't say that. I can't say that because I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but even if everything works out and whatever this is in Congress gets passed and signed into law, A, it doesn't kick in till 2013, so that's 45,000 in 2009, and 2010 makes it 90, and 2011 makes it 135,000, and 2012 makes it 180,000. That's 180,000 dead Americans who didn't have to be that way. Holy cow. And you can just get up in the morning and put your going to Congress clothes on and take your car and get dropped off at your house or Senate office building. Yeah, good morning, sir. Good morning. Good morning. Oh, I see you've got your pen on. Yeah, march right through here. Don't worry about the metal detector. Yeah, go on up. There's several healthcare lobbyists waiting for you, and I think they've got big bags of money. Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And we know what it is to divide that 45,000 by 365. And we know that somewhere in this country someone is dying a miserable, unnecessary death. God Almighty. So, yeah. Marty also chimed in. He said, hopefully you'll be cracking open a good beer. It ain't going to be no... Probably a Foster's. Which is brewed in Georgia, I know, but I can't, there's not just a heck of a lot of, a Fleegum triple around here. And Marty also adds, now, let Peyton and Drew go to the Super Bowl Sunday unblemished. I know. It would be fun to see Drew Brees do it, though. Let's go to the phones. Oh, darn it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Don't call me, sir.
I know. I knew it the minute it came out of my mouth. It's just a southern habit. We'll all have to get over it.
Yeah. I just got to call in. Wish you, Agnes, and the family a very turkey day, okay?
Yes.
For all of the turkeys. Because we're all a bunch of turkeys. And Sarah is Paganus and Paganus. Is she not?
Without a doubt. And she's after the Canadians, too, now, if you didn't notice.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to go up there and say, what is it they say? Oofta? No, that's Minnesota. Come on. People, stop. think. Be yourself. Don't believe anything you hear and nothing that I say, right? But I am a veteran of a war that you sent me to, that you disavowed. You forgot it. You want to start it over? Okay? Afghanistan. Just now. You're going back into Nam. You're going to go into a place they welcome. Nobody asked you there, and they didn't do a GD thing against you. I didn't say goddamn, Bob.
No, you didn't.
But I said, it's enough. People, people, people. Come on. You are my people. You are that, Bob. I love you. I care about you. I just stand and I just grit my teeth. And I am so sick and tired of hearing people, you know, hey, you got your your football and your game balls and your dumb balls and your...
Don't forget the crow balls.
Crow balls. Whatever. It's that. You just keep going into your own, what does that say? Is that Roman?
Bread and Roman. Circuses. Frank.
Bread and circuses. You people are into so much bread and circuses. It is pathetic. My dear brother, my friend, son of your father, son of my father, son of our father, realize when you're fed up, you've had enough bread and circuses. Come on out. Let's fight. Let's at least exchange words. Let us speak to one another.
That's what we try to do 3 hours a night.
Enemies.
But there's a
not as friends.
But the thing is, Bob, we are in a nation and in a situation now where there is no dialogue with the other side.
Well, then let us call them what they are. Enemy. The Republican Party is the enemy. The Republicans are enemies of truth. And let us bring them out and say, let us fight. Let us fight. Not have a debate. Like Kennedy did back in the 60s, let us fight like you did back in that, what do you call that, a civil war? It was not a civil war. It was a war of insurrection. It was a war against democracy from the southern states. You fought us then, fight us now. Stand against truth and democracy, be that rebel that you are. Or stand with us and say, no more, no more, it's enough. I'm tired of listening to this CRAP on the internet or on the, the national radio program thingy from George W. The Rebel Bush from Texas? Come on. You better get it on. I have a Chicano that lives up the road from me, just here in North Dakota, and he's a good man. The family, good people. I love them. They are decent human beings. He's not a green carter. Or he don't have to have. He is a naturally born American, just like I am, just like my. Oh, here's the thing. I was going to throw this in earlier, okay? Bob, okay. Go Vikings and take Christopher fucking Columbus with you. Go home. leave us alone. We are human beings living on a continent. Take that crap back with you. Start your world wars, but keep them over there in Europe where they belong. Okay? Think about it. You wouldn't have Korea or Vietnam or Afghanistan or Iraq or Nicaragua or
El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Haiti,
Colombia. Come on.
Venezuela. Peru.
Leave this part of the world and go back to your flat planet crap that you started back there in the, what was it, the 14th century or was it the 15th or 16th? I don't give a shit about your century or your millenniums. I want you to start believing in us. We, the people of the planet Earth, we have worth. My neighbor has worth. I have worth. My children are worthy. Your children are very worthy. You are people of this planet, and I love you. I care about you. And on this day, let us give thanks that we know each other and that we are planet people of the planet Earth, and that
what the only race that matters, the human race.
That is a fact. It doesn't matter. It's black, white, red, green, yellow. We've got antennas sticking out of your head. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, Bob. The only thing that matters is this. That this day, tomorrow, I give thanks. I give great thanks. I have known man as solid and as truthful as you. And Michael Lay and a few others down the way, I would say to them the same thing. I give that kind of thanks that you stand. You at least stand for something. The truth. Not kind of, spin it to fit our ideology, okay? You just stand for what you see and what you know is true. And I love you for it, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Y'all doing all right up there?
I'm getting older and you're getting younger.
Nah, I'm getting uglier.
I said a bad word, didn't I?
Well, you know, that's like your fourth or fifth, so I quit counting.
It's been a long time. I've missed you. We have.
Well, don't think that you're not wondered about, because you are.
Well,
everybody I've had people. We heard from Gunny Bob in a while. Is he okay?
I'm still here, but I'm not dead yet. I'm kind of like Patton. I saw that portrait of Patton, and I thought, yeah, that's a man. He's good. He didn't exactly do what he was told to do, and sometimes he did extraordinary things the others couldn't do. And now I'm asking you, my fellow Americans, on this Turkey Day, don't be up. Okay. I'm going to say it, Bob.
No, we've had one F-bomb. No more F-bombs.
Don't be a friggin' turkey, okay? I didn't say
much better.
Don't be a friggin' turkey. Just be an American, just like your warfare. Just be that, a man, a woman, a child, standing for something and believing in yourself. Don't believe in what you're being told. Believe in yourself. I believe in you so much. And I listen to you, Bob. I do. I get your podcast. I just love you so much because you are true American. You have true American spirit. You have true American faith. another, you stand for something other than yourself. And I love you for it. You stand for one another. And I've listened. Love what I hear. But I need more. I need action. I need you to stand up and get out there and tell Obama, please, we voted for you. We put you in office. Do an easy job. GD job. Just do the job we sent you there to do. Be a man. And if you die for it, JFK, then you are that kind of man that we sent to do that job that we asked you to do. Don't be afraid to die, because I'm not, you're not, nor is Agnes, nor your children. We will stand, fight, and we will do just that. Die for what we believe in. God can pay. Believe in you. Love you. We have. I always will. But people, believe other and be willing to give up that last measure. And you won't have to, because you will not stand alone. You are amongst the people of this good earth. Thank you, Bob Kincaid, for being here.
Well, thank you, Bob. And our best goes right back to you and Glenda and the family. And
have some pumpkin pie tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you know, I realized I was about to make a terrible, terrible mistake in the Thanksgiving and, Thanksgiving tradition, because last night I was thinking about the stuff I'd missed at the grocery store, so I went out to get my chicken broth, which I'd forgotten to get, and to get my celery, which I'd forgotten to get. And then I was in the store, and I realized, holy crap, I'm about to let Thanksgiving go by, and there's not going to be a banana pudding? Because my dad, oh, my God, he loved his banana pudding. And
pumpkin pie. I make it fresh. I take it right off the pumpkin. I do my own up here in North. We don't even have any of them, what do you call them, ramps? We have to do with, what do you call it, garlic. We have to actually grow garlic.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to figure out a way to freeze-dry you some ramps and get them up to you, because they ain't nothing like them. You know, I was at one of those little festivals around here, Bob, and lo and behold, somebody around here is canning pickled ramps.
There you go.
Holy mackerel. I lit into one of those things, and it lit right back. I mean, merciful God. Chopped a couple into a little batch of homemade, just fresh salsa, and it was a mind-altering experience. But we are hoping for the very best Thanksgiving for you, and it's good to hear from you, my friend.
Sour, but hey, Bob,
and
we,
yeah.
Bob, do this for me. Glenda's love to Agnes, okay?
Absolutely.
Glenda's love. Sister, ain't got nothing to do with us boys or us little boys and our talking. It's got to do with two women. We both love so much, sisters, than you and I could ever be brothers. Know it, feel it, be it. Be part of what you and I truly are. Brothers. Beyond, and hey, good turkey day to you. I'm not going to say Thanksgiving because I ain't thankful. I'm not happy. I'm not proud, but I am there. I'm glad and I am very, very happy to have had this evening to say hello, my fellow Americans, and good luck. Or is that good night and good luck? Or good luck and good night? It don't matter. It's up to you.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Bob, it's good to hear from you, and I hope you have a wonderful feast tomorrow.
Hey, I'll eat. I'll make kind of funny
And then turkey sandwiches on Friday.
Be well.
You too. Take care, Bob. Bye now. That's our old buddy Bob from the High Plains of North Dakota. And we will roll on.
Hey,
hey, welcome.
How's it going?
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Well, I was wondering if I could rant.
do please.
Well, I'm sure you saw this article I sent you on the global warming study about saying it saves lives to curb global warming and all that stuff. And not just future lives, but lives right now.
Right.
And it was just one piece in here about the saying that as things are right now, we could be preventing, you know, preventable heart trouble and lung trouble. And I guess I'm pissed at this because it's like,
yeah, and let's emphasize something here because I did read the story earlier, and what grabbed me is once again, you know, this is not from the knee jerk liberal weekly, okay? This is from The Lancet, which is the British medical journal, which is peer reviewed, which is rock solid, and but the way this story from the Associated Press plays out, Gene, it says cutting global warming pollution would not only make the planet healthier, it would make people healthier too. New research suggests slashing carbon dioxide emissions could save millions of lives. Blah 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 blah, and I'm not being disrespectful, but this is new research.
Yeah, I know. But the thing of it is, it's like, Jesus Christ, I mean, it's like, I don't work for GM or any number or a coal company, but darn it, I am working for them. Even when I'm asleep, I'm like, you know, I'm breathing the crap in. I want my dividend check, damn it, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
There's some guy around here in Portland that actually makes money by saying, I'll wear your T-shirt for so-and-so amount.
Right.
I think it's in Portland, or maybe you mentioned it, I don't know. But, I mean, it's like, I am so pissed off about this. It just makes, I get so mad, and it's hard to explain. And the thing that really makes even matter as I'm reading this, the idiots that are doing all this crap, they have no idea. What did we do? We didn't do anything wrong. We just made a product. You were the ones that bought it. It's like, no, I didn't buy it. My neighbor bought it. I'll tell you, Bob. I'll tell you. If it makes you feel any better, you have my permission to go into Walmart and smoke. I mean, hey, you're supporting a local southern economy by smoking, right?
Right, right. And I'm providing health care for children.
Yes. So go right ahead. I mean, my God. I mean, if I get a breathing carbon lead or carbon monoxide from tailpipes on cars, what's the hell? Go ahead.
Well, you know that little yellow cloud that's visible from space coming from China, Gene.
Yeah.
It doesn't come back and land on me. It comes back, lands on you.
I know. And you guys get to send your little yellow cloud to England, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you know, it kind of goes up the East Coast and, you know, right, and then, you know, across and, right, sure.
So I read that and it's like, I guess what shocks me, and I guess I shouldn't be shocked because I've been at this a while, but it's like that thing with the so-called climate scientific fraud scandal or whatever.
And oh, you mean Climategate?
Yeah, Climategate. It's like there is no fraud, and it's like I read that one piece that I put on John's show on last Sunday, and I couldn't, because when you first read it, it reads like an opinion piece, but it's got no author, it doesn't say opinion, and I'm feeling really PO'd about it, and really mad, and it's like, at that point, it was like, gee, why bother? I guess I feel like you and Sandra. It's like, where is my positive experience of America? Where is it? I mean, I was kidding with you the other day when I was thinking, well, maybe I'll go over to England and hide under a porch and ask for muesli and fish and chips. But you know what? Only half. I'm really thinking about it, man. I'm really thinking about, is there a way I can get over there and you know, fitting in? Because I'm sick of this crap. I know you are, too. You're sick of it more than I am, I'm sure, but it's...
I won't compete with you. I mean...
Yeah, I know, but I mean, Jesus Christ, I'm tired of being taken for granted by a government that says it's mine. You know, they talk about, I read that, John had mentioned the other night about that history of oil, which that's on that post too, if you want to look at it. I feel like such a sucker. And
what was that response from George Monbiot, that I saw earlier today to the whole climate gate thing? I'm furiously trying to find it now because it's on my laptop and not on the main production machine.
Well, I'll see what I can do because I actually didn't read that, but it's probably over. It's either probably over at Sophia's or.
I think I read it at Feringula, but.
Okay. It might have been. It might have been Feringula. That would be a good one.
But if I can find it, it deserves reading because it's stunningly appropriate.
Let's see.
Here it is. Here it is. Yeah, this came from Patrick, our buddy Patrick in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Just give me a second here because it bears sharing, and it's right where you're talking about. If only I could type. I can't do it worth a damn on the fly, I promise you. I can't.
Yeah, as I said, it's a stress. It's like, it's sort of like me with my nervous deafness.
I'm sorry, I didn't laugh. I'm a bad person.
Okay, you can laugh.
No, it was from The Guardian. From The Guardian. And you know, somebody will correct me. Monbiot.
Yeah.
First name George.
Yeah.
He says, it's no use talking about global warming rigged. Here's the email I'd need to see. And he says, the leaked exchanges are disturbing, but it would take a conspiracy of a very different order to justify skeptics' claims. And this is from the comment is free page, which I love, by the way.
Yeah.
He says, it's no use pretending this isn't a major blow. The emails extracted by a hacker from the climatic research unit at the University of East Anglia could scarcely be more damaging. I'm now convinced that they are genuine, and I'm dismayed and deeply shaken by them. Do the background on this, anybody who doesn't know about it already.
Yeah.
Yes, the messages were obtained illegally. Yes, all of us say things in emails that would be excruciating if made public. Yes, some of the comments have been taken out of context. But there are some messages that require no spin to make them look bad. There appears to be evidence here of attempts to prevent scientific data from being released, and even to destroy material that was subject to a Freedom of Information request. Worse still, some of the emails suggest efforts to prevent the publication of work by climate skeptics, or to keep it out of a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I believe that the head of the unit, Phil Jones, should now resign. Some of the data discussed in the emails should be reanalyzed. And then he asks the important question, but do these revelations justify the skeptics' claim that this is the final nail in the coffin of global warming theory? You know, that's what Michel Malkin said. Not at all, he says. They damage the credibility of three or four scientists. They raise questions about the integrity of one or perhaps two out of several hundred lines of evidence. To bury man-made climate change, a far wider conspiracy would have to be revealed. And this is where it gets good. Luckily for the skeptics, and to my intense disappointment, I have now been passed the damning email that confirms that the entire science of global warming is indeed a scam. Had I known that it was this easy to rig the evidence, I wouldn't have wasted years of my life promoting a bogus discipline. Discipline. I really haven't gotten into the beer yet, I promise. In the interests of open discourse, I feel obliged to reproduce it here. And It's the Knights Carbonic.
Okay, yeah, that's your...
Yeah. Gentlemen, the culmination of our great plan approaches fast. What the Master called the ordering of men's affairs by a transcendent world state ordained by God and answerable to no man, which we now know as communist world government, advances towards its climax at Copenhagen. For 185 years since the Master, known to the laity as Joseph Fourier, launched his scheme for world domination, the entire physical science community has been working towards this moment. The early phases of the plan worked magnificently. First, the Master's initial thesis, that the release of infrared radiation is delayed by the atmosphere, had to be accepted by the scientific establishment. I will not bother you with the details of the gold paid, the threats made, and the blood spilt to achieve this end, but the result was that the elimination of the naysayers and the disgrace or incarceration of the Master's rivals. Within 35 years, the third warden of the Grand Temple of the Knights Carbonic, our revered prophet John Tyndall, was able to demonstrate the Master's thesis. Our control of physical science was by then so tight that no major objections were sustained. More resistance was encountered and swiftly dispatched when we sought to install the sixth warden, Svante Arrhenius, first as professor of physics at Stockholm University, then as rector. From this position, he was able to project the Master's second grand law, that the infrared radiation trapped in a planet's atmosphere increases in line with the quantity of carbon dioxide the atmosphere contains. He and his followers, led by the junior warden Max Planck, were then able to adapt the entire canon of physical and chemical science to sustain the second law. Then began the most hazardous task of all, our attempt to control the instrumental record. Securing the consent of the scientific establishment was a simple matter, but thermometers had by then become widely available, and amateur meteorologists were making their own readings. We needed to show a steady rise as industrialization proceeded, but some of these unfortunates had other ideas. The global co-option of police and coroners required unprecedented resources, but so far we have been able to cover our tracks. The over-enthusiasm of certain of the Knights Carbonic in 1998 was most regrettable. The high reading in that year has proved impossibly costly to sustain. Those of our enemies who have yet to be silenced maintain that the lower temperatures after that date provide evidence of global cooling, even though we have ensured that 8 of the 10 warmest years since 1850 have occurred since 2001. From now on, we will engineer a smoother progression. Our co-option of the physical world has been just as successful. The thinning of the Arctic ice cap was a masterstroke. The ring of secret nuclear power stations around the Arctic Circle, attached to giant immersion heaters, remains undetected, as do the space-based lasers dissolving the world's glaciers.
Oh, jeez.
Altering the migratory and reproductive patterns of the world's wildlife has proved more challenging. Though we have now asserted control of the world's biologists, there is no accounting for the unauthorized observations of farmers, gardeners, bird watchers, and other troublemakers. We have therefore been forced to drive migrating birds, fish, and insects into higher latitudes and to release several million tons of plant pheromones every year to accelerate flowering and fruiting. None of this is cheap, and ever more public money, secretly diverted from national accounts by compliant governments, is required to sustain it. The cooperation of these governments requires unflagging effort. The capture of George W. Bush, a late convert to the cause of communist world government, was made possible only by the threatened release of footage filmed by a knight at Yale showing the future president engaged in coitus with a Ford Mustang. Most ostensibly, capitalist governments remain apprised of where their real interests lie, though I note with disappointment that we have so far failed to eliminate Václav Klaus. Through the offices of compliant states, the Master's third grand law has been established. World government will be established under the guise of controlling man-made emissions of greenhouse gases. Keeping the scientific community in line remains a challenge. The national academies are becoming ever more querulous and greedy and require higher payoffs each year. The inexplicable events of the past month, in which the windows of all the leading scientific institutions were broken and a horse's head turned up in James Hansen's bed, appear to have staved off the immediate crisis. But for how much longer can we maintain the consensus? Knights Carbonic, now that the hour of our triumph is at hand, I urge you all to redouble your efforts in the name of the Master. Go forth and terrify. Signed, Professor Ernst Kutwasi, University of Redcar, 21st Grand Warden of the Temple of the Knights Carbonic, And the author says this is the kind of conspiracy the deniers need to reveal to show that man-made climate change is a con. The hacked emails are a hard knock, but the science of global warming withstands much more than that.
And you think I'm crazy when I say they're out to change us genetically.
Oh, I know. But you know, that goes hand in hand with the article about curbing global warming saves lives, you know, studies say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it astonishes me, Gene, that you can have a statement from HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, to wit, relying on fossil fuels leads to unhealthy lifestyles, increasing our chances for getting sick, and in some cases takes years from our lives. As greenhouse gas emissions go down, so do deaths from cardiovascular and respiratory diseases. This is not a small effect. This is news?
Well, I suppose to your average brain dead.
I mean, anybody who knows the story of Sylvia Plath knows it's not good to inhale hydrocarbons.
Yeah, but how many right wingers know that story? I just don't think that many.
Well, okay, I'm being too arcane then. My bad.
Anyway.
It happens.
I just had to rant. It's just like.
Well, thanks for putting up with the long read, too. I appreciate it.
No. That was fine. It was good laugh. I might post that somewhere, but that's not already been posted. Anyway, I'll let somebody else get out and vent their frustration.
All right, Gene, you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too, boss.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Gene. And, yeah, he wants his subsidy. Breathing that SUV. Help! Yeah, indeed. So we're halfway through the program. How did that happen? We've got a little fun coming up just for the heck of it. Our buddy, Critic at Large Reverbo, notes via email, you know, Southern Culture on the Skids, talking about banana pudding, you know, Southern Culture on the Skids sings the praises of this dessert, specifically day-old banana pudding, so as to give it a chance to develop the flavor. Oh, it has to develop the flavor. It absolutely must. And see, I'm a purist. I used to cheat back when we still had it on the shelves around here. I'd buy the you cook it flan in a box, and you, because vanilla pudding is just so vanilla pudding. So tomorrow I got to make this stuff from scratch. That'll take a little work, but anyway, the flavor does have to develop. It all has to marry, and here's the trick. Here's the thing that just really made it something that my father simply adored. Instead of the vanilla wafers on the bottom, pay attention here, Lorna Doones. Yes, Lorna Doones. 1,000 times more intense. 1,000 times more expensive, too. The little bastards were $4 a box. But anyway, yes, you have to let it sit for a day to develop the flavor. Reverbo notes, they even mention it goes good with vanilla wafers. Now, see? Could you illuminate for your listening audience who did not grow up with the possums how to make this creamy treat? Banana pudding, by the way, is from Southern Culture on the Skids 1997 release, Plastic Seat Sweat, featuring additional choice cuts like Earth Mover and Love-Arama. And you didn't include it in the email? Reverbo, are you slipping, buddy? But really, foil, long pan, sheet pan, whatever, bottom, Lorna Doones, layer of sliced bananas, banana pudding is just, no, it's so recherche. Or maybe recherche, I'll get a correction, I'm sure. And then on top of that, your custard of some sort. And then boom, 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 the way we do it, another layer of bananas, boom, 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 another light layer of Lorna Doones, and serve topped with whipped cream. Yeah? Yeah. You know, so every, and that's the thing, you know, for us, Thanksgiving Day is a day of sort of, you know, we sit down to the dinner, but then it's, you know, it's kind of like Thanksgiving, you know, the real, it's what happens the next day, too. You know what I mean? Because that's when, you know, the turkey carcass soup happens, and that's when the turkey sandwiches happen. And that's when the rest of the desserts get hit. I'm getting real worked up about this banana pudding. I can't believe that I had almost forgotten it. It's fairly easy. And if you can get the stovetop cook it the stovetop version of flan, you know, never mind the caramel sauce that comes with it, although if you want to, that's wonderful too. Cook that and pour that over and let it set up, and man. But for some reason, whereas Kroger used to carry it, they no longer do. Which sucks, because it did make things just, you know, it saved a little step, because sitting there constantly stirring, yeah. David in Tennessee. But I like the Sylvia Plath drop. Yay! See, I can't... I dare not underestimate you guys. Because you got it. But try that on a right-wing radio show and see. Flat as a pancake. Yeah. Hey, let's take a moment for just a little bit of pre-Thanksgiving fun. And... you know, I'm sure you've probably gone and seen it, but I haven't. And I enjoy this every Thanksgiving just because it's so damn precious. And it's got a radio association. So sit back and enjoy at least the audio. You know what I mean? Right.
Babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big WKRP turkey giveaway. So take it away, Les Nessman.
This is Les Nessman, your man on the scene here at the Pinedale Shopping Center, where the excitement is mounting. We're here to witness the big WKRP turkey Thanksgiving giveaway.
Hey, you got permission to be out here?
What?
You're blocking my store here, buddy.
Don't you know who I am?
Huh?
I'm Les Nessman. I won the Buckeye Newshawk Award last year.
Good for you, Buckeye. Now get out of my doorway.
I'm sorry. Freak?
So far, so good, huh?
I'm here with hundreds of people who have gathered to witness what has been described as perhaps the greatest turkey event in Thanksgiving Day history. All we know for sure is that in a very few moments, there are going to be a lot of happy people out here. Now, the crowd is... The crowd is curious, but well-behaved. And I think I hear something now. The crowd is moving out into the parking area. And, oh, yes, I can see it now. It's a helicopter. And it's coming this way.
A helicopter?
It's flying something behind it. I can't quite make it out. It's a large banner. And it says, Happy Thanksgiving. W-K-R-P. What a sight, ladies and gentlemen. What a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet into the air. No parachutes yet.
Happy skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but...
Oh, my God, they're turkeys! Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of our eyes. I just went through the windshield of a parked car. Johnny, this is terrible.
Others running around pushing each other. Oh, my goodness. Oh, the humanity. Turkeys are hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement. I don't know how much longer the crowd is running for their lives. I think I'm going to step inside. I can't stand here and watch this anymore. No, I can't go in there.
Children are searching for their mothers, and, oh, not since the Hindenburg tragedy has there been anything like this. I don't know how much longer I can hold my position here, Johnny. The crowd...
Lass, are you there? Les isn't there. Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les.
just tuned in, the Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkeys. Film at 11.
Look, Mr. Mayor, yes, there was some damage, sir, but no one was hurt.
Mr. Colley, we know what the Humane Society stands for.
The National Guard? No, sir, the National Guard, I don't think it's that serious.
Well, Mr. Colley, a lot of turkeys don't make it through Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes, sir. Yes, sir, thank you very much.
Yes, goodbye. That was the Humane Society. They sounded pretty upset.
Oh, Andy, why did you let Mr. Carlson do this?
Because it's Mr. Carlson's station.
This man must be stopped before he promotes again.
Now, listen. Mr. Carlson was here at WKRP when we were just kids. And I bet you he's going to be here long after we're all moved on.
Yeah, but Andy, look.
Now, Venus, if we cut him out, what's the point? Look, we're the young ones. And sometimes I think we're just a little bit too concerned about being number one. Now, Mr. Carlson, Well, he's just Mr. Carlson. He just wants to be a part of things.
Sight gag.
Should have worked.
Can I help you?
No, I'm fine.
Hey, Mr. Carlson. What's it like to ride in a helicopter?
A lot of fun.
Mr. Carlson, could I get you a cup of coffee?
What? No, thank you, Jennifer.
You agreed? Huh? Sir,
it was the most unusual promotion idea I ever heard of. Never been anything else like it. No, I don't suppose there has.
I thought it would work. I planned this thing right down to the last detail. It was perfect. Where'd you get those birds?
Les, are you okay?
I don't know. A man and his two children tried to kill me. After the turkeys hit the pavement, the crowd kind of scattered, but some of them tried to attack me. I had to jam myself into a phone booth. Then Mr. Carlson had the helicopter land in the middle of the parking lot. I guess he thought he could save the day by turning the rest of the turkeys loose. Gets pretty strange after that.
Oh, gets strange.
Yeah, right. Now, Les, come on now, tell us the rest.
I really don't know how to describe it. It was like the turkeys mounted a counterattack. It was almost as if they were organized.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
There's nothing like it. There is absolutely nothing like it. And that just... Maybe some would say, wow, you know, a radio station's not really like that. I've worked in small market radio stations. And it is like that. Oh, my God, it so is like that. Probably the most spot on there wasn't a character on that program, and it was just a perfect ensemble cast. There wasn't a character on that show that anybody working in radio didn't look at and go, oh, I worked with that guy. And in some cases, some of us really did work with that guy. I'm one of those people. And I will not say which character, but the fact of the matter is, the way the character was drawn and portrayed and acted in the show is exactly or near enough to be scarily realistic to the real person. No kidding. Yeah, my brush with greatness. I worked with one of the people who was the actual model for one of the characters on WKRP. So there. That must prove that I'm a real radio guy. We have had our fun.
And there's more fun coming. Remember, the Kincaid Family Story Hour is coming up probably in the third hour of the program. If you've got something on your mind, don't hesitate to use the phone. It is a call-in program, remember. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. If you want to save us the freight, you can dial direct 304-658-3333. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Easy, 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 easy. We had a first-time caller just a night or so ago, and that was a beautiful thing. And when you hear first-time callers, you know what? I can follow up and say they survived the experience. So there's no reason for any timidity whatsoever. Real world, just a couple of things to catch up with as we contemplate Thanksgiving dinner, and Bob prattles on and on about his the modifications to banana pudding. I was reminded of this by our buddy David in South Carolina. This goes back to July, but adult obesity rates increased in 23 states and did not decrease in a single state in the past year, according to F as in Fat, How Obesity Policies Are Failing in America 2009, a report released by the Trust for America's Health and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I've always wondered, was Robert Wood Johnson, is that the same guy who wrote, you know, I went down to the crossroads and got down? No, I don't know. In addition, the percentage of, because he never got rich, but he's got a foundation named after him, so this must be a different Robert Johnson. In addition, the percentage of obese or overweight children is at or above 30% in 30 states. And yes, we are not the worst off, I don't think. The least fat state is apparently Colorado, according to the color coding. But here in Appalachia, in West Virginia, we's way on up there. We's right fat. West Virginia, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Alabama have obesity rates of between 30% to less than 35%. Have I got the colors right? You know, it would help if they would use sharply delineated colors, but, you know, who the hell am I? Yeah, Mississippi was the fattest, most obese among adults. Again, Alabama, Tennessee, West Virginia. Not much better off as follows in adult obesity. In the 25% to less than 30% range, we have, moving west to east, Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, and what appears to be Maryland and Delaware. Yeah. But the problem, again, I don't think... I personally do not think that this is a case of, you know, too many bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwiches. I think it's a case of too many McDonald's, too many super-duper value extra jumbo-sized meals, too much high-fructose corn sweetener. But also, it's a function of the changing nature of American society, from a work-based society to a sedentary society. I will tell you, and it's no damn joke, that on October the 17th, 2005, when this program premiered on the Internet, I was a svelte 220 pounds. I will not tell you what my weight is now. Suffice to say, it is more than 220 and more than is good for me. And that is a function of being sedentary. We don't till the earth. We don't sweat in manufacturing jobs anymore, because all of those have been taken away from us. The very ground that was farmed before has been taken away from us to put up McMansion communities
and more strip malls so we can hustle more Chinese crap to more people. You know, such is the circle of the downward spiral, I suppose, of that modern American life, which was inquired of at the beginning of the program. Just a couple of other things, by the way, before we go to the phones. Let's go to the phones. Don't keep people holding, Bob. It's not polite. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, I'll tell you, the one that got to me the last day or two, have you seen this thing about Mark Halperin?
You mean with the Mary Landrieu photograph?
Yeah. Could you imagine, and he said it last night, could you imagine if Keith Olbermann did the same thing to Sarah Palin? Could you imagine the screaming and hollering you'd get?
Oh, it would circle the planet.
And isn't it amazing how you don't hear CNN or any of the networks saying word one about it?
No, yeah, it's simply not, it's not out there. It doesn't exist.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like this, it's like this thing. You know, we've had the last few weeks, this thing with, you know, faux noise where they've been caught twice in 2 weeks, inadvertently running bad tape. You know, like,
yeah, and now it's apparently a killing fact, killing offense, right?
But I mean, could you imagine what would happen if they caught Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow doing that? Oh dear Lord, they'd be the boys on the right would be on the air demanding they'd be fired.
Oh, there'd be a bill introduced in Congress. It'd be Acorn all over again.
That's what I mean, and it's amazing. Like I say, and if you go over to Media Matters, you can sit there and just read it. You know, verse after verse, and you can go back to the original Tea Party when they were running Obama's inauguration film and claiming it was Tea Partiers. You know, they had to have that big picture of the crowd there at the tidal pool. So what they did was they used some tape from Obama's inauguration.
Yes.
And claimed it was Tea Partiers. And they had the thing, you know, when it was the thing with Joe Biden where they ran a tape that was like 2 years old. It was a two-year-old speech and swore this is what he was saying on the trail when they were running for office. They got some piece of tape for like 2005 or 2006 and were saying this is what he said last night and were running it. And, you know, we can go through it, you know, thing after thing, you know what I mean, example after example. But amazingly enough, as we say, you know, it's amazing how like the Washington Post or CNN or the New York Times, it's just downright, they've just been, I don't know what the exact word you want to say it is, they've been, I guess the old term used to be bitch slapped to the point now that they're afraid to call the conservatives on anything, but if the conservatives call liberals on something, they join in the crowd.
Oh, if conservatives openly call for murder. Which they've been doing of late, you know, or use eliminationist rhetoric.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not like they mean it. I mean, you know.
Oh, before I forget, thank you very much for running that. I mean, it's over the air. It still sounds good. You wish you could pop up the pictures of Richard Sanders when he walks in, has that just.
Oh yeah, when
his eye just like. Oh.
Yeah, when the big guy and Herb Tarlick come in. With the ripped clothing and, you know, feathers sticking out here. And that line that closes it all, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
It's like, say, the top three comedy things I still think that probably are, these are my three, are that one, the end of the Newhart show, where he wakes up in the bed.
Right, next to Suzanne Plachet.
Suzanne. And the other one is the Mary Tyler Moore, Chuckles the Clown.
Oh, Chuckles just.
And the funeral.
That episode taps something fundamentally cultural or maybe anthropological. Because you know it's one long. See, I just chuckled, I giggled just thinking about it. It's one long setup.
Oh
You know, with Mary righteously giving hell to the newsroom staff for giggling about the death of Chuckles.
The staff does it through the entire episode, the first 20 minutes of the episode. And then when they get to the funeral, she's the only one who can't control it. That's just, you know, it's like...
And you know, I mean, there's something fundamentally human about it, and there's something uncontrollable about it, because I had something similar happen to me the other day when we were talking about the breast cancer study and the intergovernmental panel and yada yada yada, and lo and behold, it turns out I mentioned the name of one of the members of the panel. I was ruined for about 60 solid seconds. I couldn't get my breath. I couldn't stop laughing.
It's one of those things, unfortunately, it just hits us at certain times.
Oh, and by the way, Lottie in the chat room also throws in that the Northern Exposure episode on the history of Sicily is another great.
Yeah, I mean, there are different ones, you know what I mean, but those are just the three that just came to my mind. The Newhart one was just because it was just such a surprise. You know, when you're sitting there and everything's just going wild with Bob, and all of a sudden they went totally dark. And then they come back to that scene. And
you know, maybe that's how The Sopranos should have ended. Tony should have awakened in bed next to Bob Newhart and Suzanne Plachette, with both of them screaming.
Probably should have rolled over and there should have been Joe Pesci. You know. What are you looking at? What are you looking at?
You know, I was having a conversation yesterday with someone who has actually never seen My Cousin Vinny. And I felt like I was a missionary bringing.
Well, and the thing of it is, the person you know who really and it's shameful is right at the end of his life.
Fred Gwynne.
Fred Gwynne. That was just such a perfect role as the judge. Oh,
counselor.
Just was.
Yeah. What are you wearing, Herman?
Oh, I tell you, he's just one of those guys that you just sit there watching. Oh. Thing I was wanting to mention a minute ago, and I'm sorry, lost my train of thought. You know, we think that some people have gotten past the point. I was sitting here and got home tonight, turned on the TV and thought, well, okay, I'll watch, you know, a little bit of MSNBC. They've gone to docudramas.
Already?
Yeah. After Ed, I thought, well, we'll watch Chris's repeat. They went straight into one of their Dateline things or something.
Oh, you mean it wasn't America in Prison?
I'm not sure which one this one was.
I get so tired of prison stories. Oh.
Either that or they keep running their predator tapes. Which I'm like, you know, guys, I understand, but you know, give it up occasionally. You have to run them, you know, one right after the other. It's like it's burnout.
If they at least do something useful and show how they make those cool tattoos once in a while, yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. Okay, I understand if Keith and Rachel want the night off. I don't blame them. Hey, everybody should. But, yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of staff people who are going to be there at NBC all night. Don't tell me.
Sure, and there's always somebody, you know, somebody's out there trying to break into the medium. Get a show.
I mean, you got somebody that's the second or third tier, that'd be happy to host the show that night. You know, if you couldn't get Lawrence O'Donnell in or you couldn't get whoever, you know, else you wanted in, you know, one of them will happily do it. You know what I mean? Like you say, there's always some struggling beat reporter, so to speak. You know, I mean, it's not exactly what it is anymore, but, you know, somebody along that line who would say, yes, I'll do it, no problem. You know, I can get on there and I can talk my head off for an hour, especially if you've got most of it already written any which way. So, you know, I mean, it's not like the news division turns out the lights and goes home. I hope not at this point. I saw the thing about the Post closing up some of their offices in the country, you know, about the Washington Post.
Right.
A couple of their satellite offices, and you're like, huh? It's like, guys, you know, I can understand if you want to close the one in New Delhi or something like that, but you're closing them in the U.S.? Oh, you know.
Yeah, but and it's not like they're you know, closing the Jefferson City, Missouri Bureau.
No. I mean, you're not closing the Bismarck City, South Dakota things. Which one's worse? I don't have it in front of me. I apologize. I don't want to tell you the wrong ones. But was it like their New York office they were closing?
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was ridiculous what it was. It was like, huh? You know what I mean? It was just like, okay. You know, I mean, and but, you know, I mean, they're getting to the point now, it's like they're, I guess they're going to go mostly like the pool report. I guess they're going to probably make some agreement probably with some group in the cities and, you know, I guess carry their news from them. It's like, but let's quit calling it the Washington Post or the whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, let's just call it all now USA Today. You know, we're all getting it from all the little papers and just sort of taping it all together. I mean, we don't need any reporters here. We can just, you know, I can go out there and pull it out of the state newspapers and just put it all together. It's where it's a national paper now. But, oh, gosh, some of this stuff is just ridiculous. Oh, how did you enjoy? I sent you a couple of articles today.
Yes.
That's our area's most unforgettable character.
Yeah, that was a fascinating read. I was not familiar with him.
Let's put it this way. Without him.
But he sounds like one of those guys that there was one of in every, you know.
Oh, there is.
Community with a TV station back in the day.
Oh, yeah. He used to have what they call the Farm and Home Hour. He used to have it on here like from 5:30 to 7 in the morning before the Today Show would come on. And that's before they actually thought about having news in the morning. And he would do that show, and oh, God.
Yeah, Cass Walker.
Cass Walker. And he was the one, he was the first one that had Dolly Parton on TV. And he was also one of the first ones to have the Everly Brothers on TV.
Wow.
So, you know what I mean? But you know what I mean? There's characters like that in every city. You just have to hunt them down, you know what I mean? But, that's our local weekly alternate papers. Stories I sent you today, I just went onto their website. I hadn't been on there in a while and pulled some stories off. But
I love those kind of reads too. So
oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's like most if nobody gets it in their town, the one thing I miss is getting creative loafing.
Yeah, I used to read Creative Loafing when I lived in Atlanta back when I rode to work at CNN on my dinosaur.
It was the preeminent alternate, and I mean it was just. It should have been a national paper. It really should have been.
We had a really good one in West Virginia that was published in Charleston by a brilliant man by the name of Michael Lipton, called Graffiti. And he eventually just got tired of trying to keep the thing alive, and sold it to an outfit of family papers from Ogden, Utah. And it's just not. Oh, I don't even know if it's published anymore because it just became unfit to read.
But you know how it is. Ours came out of the way that the way the old papers used to be. We used to have two dailies, and then they combined and sold off what was left of the other one. And so there you have a whole bunch of people that were doing paper that had no longer had a job. So they just kind of went together and said, "We'll put on our own paper." But, you know, I mean, that's just the way it goes sometimes, you know, because you can't hardly find any other than maybe the largest of the cities anymore that have more than one daily. And if you're lucky, sometimes you have that.
True enough.
But,
Is all the shopping done? Are you all ready for tomorrow?
I hope so. Like I say, I'll have to call in the morning and find out what it is that I've forgotten that I have to pick up.
So you don't actively participate in the you sort of stay out of the way and try not to screw things up.
Well, let's put it this way: I went out and I bought the turkeys, and I went today and I was picking
turkeys.
Oh, we're going to have a group. Oh, we're getting the family together. We're having at least 35.
Holy! I'd be in a little corner somewhere, huddled up in a fetal ball, just weeping at the thought.
Yeah, it's one of them fun ones. Every once in a while you get those like that. You're just like, why do we have to have this many family? Come on, can't we get rid of some of them, you know?
Aren't there some we cannot invite?
Oh, we got some coming from North
Carolina. But, I mean, it's no small group. It's no small group we're feeding here, you know, four adults, three teenagers, and two infants. Like I said, there won't be a lot left.
Let me go ahead and kill off the rest of anybody that's listening for 5 minutes. Anybody wants to take a break? which football game are you looking forward to this weekend?
Oh, I'm so all over the Iron Bowl. I got the Pitt game too.
Okay, yeah, you do up there. I know that up your way. That's going to decide how the world goes up in your neck of the woods.
Right.
Well, see, we've got the Iron Bowl, then we get to go up and we get to play Kentucky. And this is actually a year we're worried that Kentucky...
You know what? This could, it could very well be a game.
So we'll see. they were talking, and I had not realized it. The last time we lost to Kentucky was 1983.
I was going to say the Reagan administration, so, yeah.
So, actually, Vanderbilt's had a better record at us than Kentucky has, which is a silly thing to say. But
yeah, kind of hard to conceive of that. But, it, you know, the, when they went down and did Georgia, whoa.
Well, you know how it is. Everybody's done Georgia this year. It's like you say, your friend, Mr. Rick, may be seeing the floor disappear underneath him.
Yeah, he may get the apple in the roadmap treatment alongside of Charlie Weiss. Yeah. Well, here's your choice, boys. Golden Delicious or Red Delicious? You choose.
Well, look, he may turn on his GPS and it may say, go away. But
or surrender, Dorothy. You know, you never know.
But it depends on this weekend. I tell you what, if Georgia Tech takes no prisoners, especially when it comes to Georgia.
Oh, and see, and you know, I don't know. You know, is Mark Richt going to blame it on demons?
Probably, yeah. That's a good reason. I'll go with that. But it'll be interesting just to see how that is because, you know, it's like I say, this is what, as they call it, this is rivalry week. And like I say, the boys at Georgia Tech do not like the boys at Georgia, and it's mutually the other way around.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So if Georgia Tech can run up the numbers, they...
And wait, isn't the Civil War out in Oregon this weekend? And isn't this the most significant Civil War between Oregon and Oregon State of all time?
Well, see, the thing is now.
And that, I mean, that's one of those where it's no holds barred and nothing gets left on the field.
Well, the thing that the boys from Comcast, you know, down in Atlanta, have been yakking about the last couple of days is what happens if the bowls, because like I say, you know, the 1 and 2 is the only one out of the BCS that's guaranteed. What happens if Cincinnati or TCU gets bumped out for maybe a 3-loss LSU or a 3-loss USC team?
Oh. Or, you know, and you know, there's Iowa out there vying for an at-large.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a hard time, you know, rooting against Iowa just because for some reason or other I like them and feel sorry for them sometimes.
Well, I mean, they deserve a turn. You know what I mean? Can't deny that.
But
it's going to be interesting to see what happens. This may end up being the nail that finally starts tripping the BCS.
But see, Luke, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you fully understand the college football hell I'm in right now.
Oh.
Because here I am, you know, proud son of Harvard on the Mon,
mm-hmm.
and I'm about halfway to rooting for Pitt.
Well, let me put a little
background behind that.
Mm-hmm.
We have begun our painful slide into mediocrity. And
that's where I live now. Thank you.
Well,
temporarily, we hope.
And we know that we got one more year of Bill Stewart.
Okay.
But if he finishes out losing this year, and then he stinks up the joint next year, maybe it's bye bye Bill, which would suit me fine.
Yeah, well, I say you know
the other sad thing though is that instead of hiring him, and I admit when I'm wrong. I was all emotionalized after the Fiesta Bowl victory over Oklahoma and said, yeah, hell, give him a chance. But Brian Kelly was ready to pack his bags and head for Morgantown. He was actually learning the alma mater.
Well, I say...
He won't be coming to WVU because his stock has gone through the roof.
Well, I say, I don't see any way you will not be seeing him on the looking up at Touchdown Jesus. You know what I mean? Unless there's something we don't know.
Like, you think it's a lock for Pope Urban?
Well, like I say, I think Pope Urban's already, you know, I think right now he's happy where he's at. I think mostly it's because his family doesn't want to go north.
Yeah, but he's got every reason in the world to leave. You know, Jesus H. Tebow's leaving, and so's the rest of the team.
I know, but I agree with some of them. I think it's at the point right now where If life goes into the crapper, he could survive down there for 3 to 4 years before they throw him out. Unless it just absolutely, you know, literally goes into the crapper. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, no, the Civil War, Oregon State, is December the 3rd. So.
Oh, okay. That's the next. Okay.
And I'm really frustrated by the fact that I don't get to watch any West Coast football.
I would have loved to
have seen that Stanford game last week, but sorry, you know.
I thought about the only one left for the next week. I thought was the Army Navy. I thought that's about the only thing that was left, you know, for the last weekend. But there might be, there's a few still left. But Do you ever once in a while just to have some fun? Have you been following the boys up in Michigan to see what's going on?
Oh yes, I follow that like some folks will watch soap operas.
I understand. That's what I'm saying. Is it getting even better?
You know, Bill Martin, the athletic director at Michigan, has come out and said, Rich Rodriguez enjoys my complete confidence.
Ooh, he's not giving the back, is he?
Oh man. That's where Rich has to look at Big Hair Rita and say, honey, it's a good thing you didn't move to Ann Arbor with me. Okay. It ain't pack your bags. It wasn't no sense in it.
It's like, honey, I may have to go north over across the border for a couple of months before I come back down.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it
looks to be fun. But the other half of it is that as someone who attended the University of Alabama and has real passions for that school and that team.
Auburn's really happy.
I'm rooting like hell for Auburn.
Auburn is really happy right now because they think they've got the chance to be the spoiler.
And they do. They do. This is not going to be some sort of blowout. And frankly, I don't know who sets up Alabama's schedule, but I would not have played UT Chattanooga the week before I played Auburn.
I know. But you know what I mean? It's like they said, be happy. If you really want to know who had the bad schedule this year, was look at Vanderbilt. They played 12 straight weeks. They didn't have any break.
Yeah, that was brutal. It really was. No bye week. How does that happen?
That I don't understand. I mean, it's something when they recomputed, you know, when they went to the extra game, I think. Before I forget, are you going to be on Friday, or is that going to be a repeat?
That's still in development.
Well, one way or the other.
Take into account that I've got Alabama and Auburn and West Virginia and Pitt to deal with, so it's looking highly unlikely.
As happy as can be. It's like, yes, I want to talk to people. Hello. I'm so happy I talked to the dial tone right now. Yes, indeedy. Come on in here. But
Let's call the time and temperature recording and see what it has to say.
But you know what I mean? Where we started, and I'm sorry to drag everybody into sports, I'm sorry about that, but I still would love to see somebody, Albert Newsweek, please run the picture of Sarah Palin. Now, they can, I'm sure the wingnuts would say, oh, y'all been running pictures of Sarah Palin doing things like over at BartCop or something. It's like, yeah, but that's BartCop. That's not a national paper or a national magazine. Time is a national magazine. And this was not, like, say, in the humor section of Time.
Oh, but didn't she just look so cute and perky?
Oh, I know, but still, it's just, you know, I'm just sitting there going, if you could get, let's see, Joe Klein, I'm just picking him just as a name, to run a picture of Sarah Palin with the same thing, they would have people marching outside of his door with torches and pitchforks.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
You know, they would call him Satan.
But the thing is, the other thing is, though, those guys have a little bit of integrity, maybe, you know, a tiny bit, smidgen, and they're not liable to do that.
But you know what I mean? It's just, I want to hear somebody at Time explain who thought this was a good idea. I really want to hear somebody explain why somebody looked at that picture and said, you know.
Yeah, what? All the, the senior managing editor was out with a sick headache? What?
I was going to say, had it fallen all the way down to Halpin so he got to decide for himself? I mean, that's about the only reason I could see.
And this is a photograph of Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, of whom I am not particularly fond, with the Cameron Diaz
hairdo
from There's Something About Mary. And we all know what caused that, and there's no need to be graphic.
Yeah, to go into the exact.
Right, exactly.
And that's, of course, with also all the boys over at Faux Noise calling Mary Landrieu one of the profession even older than a politician this last week. Whew. That's saying something.
Yeah, because the Republicans never did anything like that. I mean, not with the party.
One other quick thing, and I'm sorry, I promised my last thing. Have you noticed how we've not seen anybody say anything about the fact that, you know, George H.W. is now not married to the beast?
Yeah, that's really crickets.
I'm surprised that Texas story is not getting more.
Because, you know, they did they celebrate their nuptials in Texas?
That's what I'm wondering. Well, I'm thinking you'd think.
Or did they get married maybe in a touching ceremony up at the end of the
maybe
pier
in Kennebunkport? I know, but you've got to think there'd be you to hear some more out of some people out of Texas talking about that. Because you think some husbands would be saying, "Hey, I ain't married. I ain't got to share money."
Yeah, what was the name of that strip joint that Newt Gingrich wanted to give an entrepreneurship award to? I think I'm going to go and see about how they're entrepreneuring.
Because I'm a single man now. Oh, boy. All right.
Goodbye, Melva. Yeah.
I'll let you go, but I don't got other people to talk to. You have a good evening.
All right, and a happy Thanksgiving to you, Luke.
All right, bye. Take her easy.
All right, bye now. And we roll onward. Or not. So we are at the, let's take a little break before we do the other traditional Thanksgiving stuff. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Emphasis on listener-supported. You're listening to the horn. A little food music, courtesy of John Fox.
Red beans and rice, I could eat a plate twice. Red beans and rice, red beans. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. About 17 minutes past the hour. There's about, do the math. Don't make me do math on the fly. I always screw up. It's not a good thing. We know that. But anyway, we're closing in on the end of this Wednesday program, and we will be done until Monday. Because there's not much of a chance of pulling me away from the Mountaineers and Pitt. And no matter how much I think about how I despise no, I'll wind up rooting for the Mountaineers. Just because it's Pitt. Ugh, Pitt. Ugh, Pitt. And then there's Alabama and Auburn. Coming up on the annual tradition, namely the Kincaid family Agnes's Thanksgiving horror story. She's in the studio with us, by the way, right now, with this wry grin on her face and just shaking her head, no, Bob, no. But you know what? There's been three of these so far, and there's going to be a fourth, too. From the mailbag, a couple of things. Maura has written in, and she says, hey, Bob, my voice isn't too good this evening, so allow me to wish you, Agnes, and all your kids and grandkids a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'm very grateful for so many things in my life, and you and the horn are on that list. As are you on ours, Maura, as are you on ours. Thanks. And this from Juanita. She says, periodically I listen to myself on the show when I think I might have offended someone. I do have problems with what to call individuals when I don't remember their name. Please correct me, kindly, please, when I call young women girls. I was talking about the girls they hire down here as nurses' aides. Many are older women who are trying in whatever way they can to make a living. I've worked with so many nurses in hospitals and in the retirement home. To me, they're probably the most noble of professionals. I admire them so much. To me, a good nurse is as close to an angel as one can get. I include the nurses' aides who make the least, but so many I have known do an outstanding job serving love and care to the ones they take care of. I apologize also for calling the head of the Congressional Committee a guy and identifying him as black. I'd never seen him before and did not get his name, still haven't.
I really mentioned him as black, mainly to give honor. It seems for years the only ones who cared for We the People were the members of the Black Caucus. Anyway, I wish you and all a wonderful Thanksgiving. It is an honor and a joy being able to talk to you. I appreciate it so much. And welcome back, Sue. I hope you get better and better every day, and one day you'll be completely well. Juanita says, Bob, I'd like you to read this if you have time. There's always time, Juanita. There's always time. And don't be too hard on yourself, dear. You are an enlightened consciousness, and it is always a joy, our conversations. So don't beat yourself up, dear. And this observation from William. He says, if this will bring the mood of the show down, it need not be read. Do have a happy Thanksgiving, but it needs to be read because there's so much reality in this. You know, I played the WKRP clip a little bit ago, the great Thanksgiving Day turkey drop. And William says, I watched it and escaped and laughed through the entire show. The sheer simplicity of it, just phones on desks, turntables with LPs, and characters with a choice few words and facial expressions. And now it's wars going on, jobs to be had with actual billboards out front describing the jobs available, the views of people starving, which were bad enough in Africa. Then the show ended and the present began to rush back in, yet I fought it. It was close to lighting a match near gasoline fumes just to drift back into the present. It was the endless dramatic change of where we are now compared to then that feels like an overwhelming shockwave. William says, that's how odd he is. There's nothing odd about that. Again, that is a matter of enlightened consciousness. And the fact of the matter is, there is something, I don't know, I look into my past, and it is as if all of my memories have that sort of Kodachrome glow to them, where the light's a little sweeter and a little more mystical. And I don't think it inappropriate at all at this Thanksgiving or any Thanksgiving or any holiday where we share time and cherish family. No matter how frustrated we may get with each other, we are, at the end of the day, family. And I don't think it improper at all. I think it necessary that we remember Thanksgiving's past. Every year when we start to make the dressing, I choke up a little bit. Because in that Kodachrome haze that is my memory, it's me, much smaller, waiting for my mother to get done with the dressing, stirring it with a wooden spoon, and by God, I stir our dressing with the same wooden spoon. And before it ever got baked, getting tastes of it to see if the sage was right or if it needed more black pepper. And my sister and I were absolutely mad for the unbaked dressing. It was exquisite. And so we'll do that again tomorrow. And I'll get a longing look back at that little guy who had all of this in front of him. Things never dreamt of. Things never imagined. Some good, some bad. But all of it made the sweeter by those who went before us and made it better and made it good. This house is in excess of 70 years old, and it is falling apart. Literally before our very eyes. We skip from one domestic homeowner crisis to the next, always wondering when the other shoe drops, what it's going to... Oh, look, the wheel stopped on septic system! But there have been a lot of Thanksgivings here, and a lot of laughter and a lot of joy, and that has to count for something. So it is not at all odd to compare this present with arguably better past. Cindy writes in and says, I'm so happy you brought up the flan. It reminded me to do my own pudding or salad. I do frog eye salad and homemade vanilla pudding. No packages at all except for Knox for thickening. This Thanksgiving, I'm thankful I'm not a widow. Steve's been kind of poorly. Cindy says, ours will be quiet, just the two of us with some drop-by neighbors and grown son. We have to cut the menu. Nothing rich for the patient, so it'll be simple but very good. I have a small turkey, 9 pounds from the coast of Oregon. They're organic, so clean the gizzards are pink instead of red. Cindy says, you have a good Thanksgiving, Bob. I'll raise a glass to you for sure. And you may rest assured that there will be in this house tomorrow a glass raised by all to the whole Horn family who have wrought such intense, deep, transcendent change upon everyone here, from the least and the littlest to the oldest and the crankiest. That would be me. And it's a heck of a ride here. I mean, a heck of a ride. It's one of those, one of those Forrest Gump moments. At least I ain't led no humdrum life. Nobody can accuse what goes on here of being boring. And it's never been boring. Boring we don't know how to do. I had a buddy once who said, damn it, I just want to option your life. You're a walking damn TV program, Bob. We can just script any given day and have ratings. He wasn't kidding. I've forgotten more adventures than I remember, but there is one that stands out and will always stand out. You know, this is the big build-up. This is the big lead-in. And Agnes is turning red. She's chuckling a little bit. She's holding her head in one hand. Because how many years ago was it, dear? Was it 2000? 1999 or 2000. Let's see. Laura was 11, so it was 1999. And no, maybe she was 12. She was 12. So it was 2000. And Margie was 6. And that would have made Ferg 5 and Doodle 4. And it was the night before Thanksgiving, a night just like this. I had not yet decided to follow the dream and go back to radio. I was doing other things. But it was the night before Thanksgiving, and of course I had Thursday and Friday off. And I got home from work, and I realized that most of the shopping had not been done. And so I looked at my lovely wife, and I said, let's pack up the kids and go to Kroger's. And Agnes gets this look on her face like, I don't want to go, boss. I said, come on, it'll be fun. Please, let's do this together. We're a family. This is the kind of thing that, this is the stuff that memories are made of. Little knowing how freighted those words would become. And so it was November, and it was getting cooler. Not freezing cold yet. It's generally not freezing cold this time of year because you have that little warm spell during the Thanksgiving week so that all the deer can go back up into the hills and hide in the bushes while the deer hunters are out chasing them around. And so we did. Doodle and Ferg in their car seats. And Margie belted in, all in the little minivan. Agnes in the passenger seat. Laura strapped in. And me driving. And we toddle, and I've got my you know, I'm not just doing this. I'm not going to ad lib this. By God, no, I'm prepared. I've got a list. And we go through the aisles of the grocery store in an orderly fashion so as not to make repeat trips halfway across the store because it's a big damn Kroger's. And I've got my list, and, you know, it was cool but not cold, so Agnes was wearing the absolutely black leather trench coat that I had bought her for Christmas a couple of years before. And bib overalls. And so we get over there, you know, and you got to understand the simple act of going into and out of the vehicle with the children at that age, those of you who have more than two children, those of you who have one child understand, especially if they're toddlers. It's just exhausting getting in the car and out of the car. And during that part of your life, you just spend you're just beat. But so we've got the four with us. We're going into the grocery store. We're going to and you give instructions to little kids like you're going into the jungle, even though it's the Kroger's. Kids, stay together. What are the four words, kids? And these precious little voices look back up at you and go, "Stay with the group." Yes. And so the way it's laid out, you go in, you shoot past the checkout, they aim you right into the most expensive part of the store except for the meat case, namely the fresh vegetables. And it's, you know, onions and asparagus and the usual fare and mushrooms and garlic. And we make it down past there, past the florist, and, you know, you got your beans and your juices and your canned goods. And we get down aisle one and back up aisle two and go down aisle three. And at this point, Doodle and Ferg have reached the absolute outer limits of their ability to behave. It was mutiny. Because Agnes has only two hands. And somehow or another, I forget exactly how, but Ferg and Doodle broke loose. And all those long, straight aisles just beg a child to run. And run they did. And rolled. They rolled in the floor. Not once, not twice, but repeatedly. I think that they were on a mission to make sure that they rolled in every aisle of that Kroger store that evening. You would think that they had never been out in civilization before. And I'm trying to hold the group together, and Agnes is getting more and more and more and more frustrated. You know, because I'm just cruising down the aisle. Okay, we need the green. Okay, I got the green bean. Okay, we got this. Do we have the mandarin? Okay, we need some pineapple. Okay, the next aisle over is the sugar and the flour. We'll need that. Just mechanically going through the shopping process. But having broke free, Agnes, there's a fundamental rule of military science that says never divide your force. But Agnes, we divided the forces, and I continued down the aisle, and she chased down the babies. Back at that time, the Disney movie Hercules had come out, and there were two little characters in the film, little demons in service of the James Wood voice characterized character of Hades. And one of them was
voiced by Bobcat Goldthwait, and the other one was, I can't remember who the other voice was, but their character names were Pain and Panic. And at that point, Doodle and Ferg were as often referred to as Pain and Panic as they were Doodle and Ferg. And so Agnes broke away from the group, and honest to God, it was like some sort of Discovery Channel documentary. Oh, see now, the female mother lion has gone in search of the cubs, while the male indolently searches for the pepperoncinis. And she was gone for a little bit, and then she came back with each of the pumpkins in hand, one in each hand. And she said, Margie and Laura are being good. They can stay with you, Daddy. You just go on and shop, and they'll be good helpers. We're going to the vehicle. We're going to the vehicle now. I can't tell you the number of meals that Agnes and the kids ate in cars when we would go to dinner. You know, go to a sit-down dinner. They still tell the story over at the Sedona Grill, our favorite little restaurant across the river, of the first time that our little bunch ever entered. And we sat down at a table, and we ordered our meals, and I think Agnes ordered the fruits de mer in puff pastry or something like that. And Pain and Panic cranked up, and she just looked at the waitress, who has gone on to become a good friend of ours, and said, put it all in a box. And looked at me and said, we'll be in the car. Enjoy your meal. Went on. I can't tell you the number of meals that she and the kids ate in a car. Nice meals. But anyway, Agnes heads out. I continue shopping. From this point on, I am oblivious to everything that goes on, and I learn it only after the fact. Up and down the aisle, back and forth, get everything. The buggy was absolutely, you know, bulging at its wire sides by the time I was done. And I went on through checkout, paid for the goods. Margie and Laura and I wheeled the cart out back to the minivan, opened the back gate, loaded in all the groceries, closed it. I put the buggy away, opened the driver's side door, sat down and got ready to put the key in the ignition, and looked over and saw, and anybody around here who's married knows that when the spouse is sitting there stone cold silent but tears are rolling down the face, you know it's hit the fan. And I said, I am such a stupid man. I am a stupid, stupid man. I looked over and said, what's wrong, dear? And everybody within the sound of my voice right now knows what the answer was, knows what answer came back. In that steely, quiet, you know, not angry, not raging, not, just dead, calm, quiet voice. Nothing. And like I said, I'm a stupid, stupid man. So, no, honey, really, I can tell something's wrong. What's wrong? Nothing. Start the car and take us home. And at this point, you know, the light's going, oh, hell. Well, okay, dear, I'll be happy to, but tell me what's wrong. I mean, it's something's badly wrong. You can't not tell me. I am never leaving our home with these children in my company again. I swear I'm not. Oh, my God, what did they do? And then the story comes out. And it doesn't come out a little bit at a time. It just pours forth from poor Agnes in a torrent of maternal frustration. brought about by the simple act of trying to mother a pair of toddlers. And here's what it boiled down to. After she left me and went up an aisle that I was not on, with pain and panic, one in one hand and one in the other, each of them realizing that they were going to the car and that they were not going to enjoy the unimpeded freedom of running up and down grocery store aisles anymore, began to engage in what we shall call passive resistance. You've all seen it at a protest, you know, where people just sit down and wait for the cops to come with the little plastic handcuffs. Flopping in the floor, no, and crying, oh, crying. Weeping. Until they got to the front of the store, where Payne then said, "Let go of me, you mean woman." Remember, Agnes is wearing a black leather trench coat. It was, yeah, with bib overalls. It was The Matrix meets Green Acres. They get to the front of the store, and Payne says, "Let go of me, you mean woman," and panic adds in, "You're not our real mommy." It's a grocery store. It's the night before Thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, the entire store transitioned to sweat condition alpha. Dead silence fell over the store. Even the Muzak stopped. And this is where, well, this is where it gets bad. Because this is where the local law enforcement authorities become involved. Because two of the local Oak Hill, West Virginia cops, or maybe they were Fayetteville, I forget which, approached my darling, beautiful wife in the black trench coat with the bib overalls once she had reached the vehicle and inquired of her as to who she was and if these were really her children. Do you hear the chuckling in the background? One was an older officer, and the other was a younger, clueless officer. You know, that's how it always works, whether it's Barney Miller or Mayberry or real life. What was the answer, dear? Oh, yeah, they're mine. You want to see proof? And starts digging out documentation. Because she was prepared with it for just such an occasion. It's not like this was the first one. This was just the worst one. And it got to the point where Agnes looked at the one officer and said, "Seriously, my husband's in there. Just take the children to him and take me away. Three hots and a cot, baby. I'm down for it." And sticks her hands out. Wrists up. Which at that point was sufficient proof to the older of the two officers that she really, really was these little Hellcats' mother. And that it would be a very, very wise thing to go away. Meanwhile, while it sounds like it probably occurred in silence, it didn't. Because pain and panic were wailing the entire time. And that's where I found her. But the happy ending to all of this is that we did have a lovely Thanksgiving dinner the next day. Agnes and I went into the kitchen, as is our wont, and worked like dogs all day long. Grandfather was there and was just tickled pink. I believe that was the Thanksgiving where we also added grilled asparagus tossed in salt, pepper, lemon juice, and olive oil to the menu, which he thought was just delightful. Because it was.
and the banana pudding was there, and the pumpkin pie. I had to make two different pumpkin pies because my father did not like pumpkin pie spice in his pumpkin pie. He wanted his pumpkin to taste like pumpkin with sugar and, you know, nothing else. And how he adored it. And oddly enough, while I talked about that Kodachrome glow of memory, this memory doesn't have that. This memory has the sort of hyper-real, harsh, fluorescent light look about it, looking back. But I swore a long time ago that I would make sure that this story was never forgotten and that it was repeated every Thanksgiving. It's not about Agnes. But I tell it every Thanksgiving simply as a reminder to myself that when they've got children, this story will be told at the table every year. And maybe 2,000 years from now, it'll be part of some religion or something. Not that I think anything of my personal qualities, but that's where myths come from. And children, that's why all brothers and sisters separated by less than 18 months are called Pain and Panic. Amen. And that's why Mommy always wears a black trench coat on the night before Thanksgiving. But that's the official Kincaid family Thanksgiving horror story. I don't know. I don't guess it has movie script quality to it, but daggum. And, you know, that's just one of a thousand.
No, it was fun for Bob.
It was not fun for me.
It was horrific for us. And I hope that this tale slowly fades away and that it will be told no more, because I want to have a happy Thanksgiving and I no longer wear leather. But I have two grandchildren that I'm sure are going to surprise me one day in a store, but hopefully when they have me arrested, there'll be peace on earth. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving, Agnes. I get some of the kindest emails that I'm not, and they almost seem too personal to share, but thank you. And Jude just offers, please let Agnes know, as a mother of four and grandmother of almost to be nine grandchildren, I know exactly what she experienced in that grocery store. Absolutely, I do. And I don't make light of it in the least. But my God, this is the world. Everybody's got one of these. And I guess the beauty, or if there's any beauty to it, of what we're trying to accomplish here is to create an opportunity for all those stories to be told. We do an awful lot of politics here. We are sharply critical of the evil that stalks among us and the sickening swamps through which we must slosh in search of some sort of a decent future for all of the little ones, and hopefully for our advancing years. But I don't know about you, but for me, hearing your stories is heartening and inspiring, and I thank you for them. This posting from our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony. If you are not signed up for the daily updates from your RDA of irony, I don't know why, because it's, Eugene is nothing short of brilliant. But today he posted, giving thanks, Eugene style. I'll interrupt my usual litany of historic scandals to wish everyone a happy or at least tolerable Thanksgiving. Even without reminders from Hallmark commercials, I have reasons to give thanks. First, I am truly grateful that I was not at Plymouth in 1621. Among those lunatic Calvinists, that was no place for a nice Jewish boy. But even tarred and feathered, I would have been grateful not to have been Catholic. The Pilgrims really hated them. I am profoundly grateful for history. My wife says that I should get out of the house more often. Thanks to history, I can eavesdrop and peeping Tom on the most fascinating people in the world. Megan Fox might look better in a swimsuit, but Catherine de' Medici is much more interesting. Of course, I'm grateful to my wife, Karen, Eugene says, if only because she never had the opportunity to run off with Roger Federer. And if she ever did, I would be grateful if she left me the pug. Furthermore, says Eugene, I'm grateful for my undeserved good health. If there were any justice in the world, I would be 300 pounds and toothless. Of the 3,000 channels I get on cable television, I am reverently grateful for Turner Classic Movies. Yes, it's another outlet for my history addiction. Megan Fox might look better in a swimsuit, but Lillian Gish is a much better actress. When Demi Moore remade The Scarlet Letter, she thought the A referred to Miss Gish's cup size, and that explains why Miss Moore's Hester Prynne wore a D. I'm grateful to Megan Fox for two punchlines. Otherwise, I would have been stuck with Britney Spears or Kim Kardashian. And Eugene says, of course, I'm grateful if anyone is reading this. Thank you. And just with a brief historic reminder of what that so-called first Thanksgiving was, we would be remiss, and I'm not trying to, I don't want to end this on a bummer or anything, but you know what? The conquest of the Americas is one long bummer if you were one of the people who lived here first. And if there is anything that should absolutely be required of any Thanksgiving feast, it is that we chuck that worn-out, made-up, revisionist piece of historical tripe out the damn window once and for all and quit thinking that there was anything noble or enlightening about the arrival of white people in North America. Because you would be hard-pressed to find it. Unless I misread my history, the first Thanksgiving proclamation by Governor William Bradford, as I believe I mentioned, was a matter of giving thanks unto Almighty God for delivering the heathen savages into the hands of the settlers so that they could be slaughtered. And while we are while we occupy this land and have settled it, so to speak, and tamed the wilderness, there's a hell of a lot of history that's unknown by most. Maybe a good Thanksgiving Day gift to yourself, if you're the book reading type, and a lot of us are, would be to get a hold of a copy, and it's out in paperback now, so it won't set you back much, of Charles C. Mann's 1491. As the old card shark says when he lays the pasteboards across the green bays, read it and weep. Oh my God, what we destroyed. And we have crafted out of that destruction and out of that genocide holiday in which we recreate or create an entire fiction surrounding the subjugation of the peoples who were here first. It was a genocide to make other genocides pale in comparison. 40 million slaughtered at least in the area we now know as Mexico. Entire nations laid waste before ever they laid eyes on a white person by white man's diseases that crossed the continent at near breakneck speed, devastating good and decent societies that were the equal of anything that barbarian Europe had to offer. And if we do not spend some small amount of time remembering that, then we increase the likelihood of doing it again and again, and then creating some godforsaken myth to justify our actions. Here in Appalachia, many people have running through their veins to this day some remnant of the genetic makeup of those first peoples. And they are subjected to an attempted genocide in progress, done for profit and expediency's sake, in which entire villages are sickened and eliminated, and whole areas of land are made uninhabitable. And of course, there is, of course, that myth to go along with and ex post facto justify the crime.
We're just creating some flat land so we can have some economic development in West Virginia. Coal keeps the lights on.
Remember what was done, lest we forget. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you to Ben Birch, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Sue, Lottie, Sue, Susan, Jean, Betsy, Guy, Rick Smith, and everyone in the whole Horn family. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, trying to stop the process of that genocide with everything that they do, everything that they have, everything that they are, and everything that they hope to be. And Agnes, above all things, I give thanks for you. You are the light in my darkness. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.